You write that you were wrapping up your 2 years in this village in Sri Lanka when you realized how your parenting must look to the Sri Lankan parents. Tell us about that.
Well, I had had this experience often where I would, my son would sort of misbehave in public and I would scold him kind of, you know, strictly, often more strictly than I would at home. You know, to demonstrate sort of, look, I respect you so much. I want this excellent behavior from my son. I don't know what I was thinking, something like that. And people would often intervene and say, oh, he's just a child, kind of sharply. And I thought they were saying, okay, I did enough, right? Very much towards the end of this first long period where I was doing my dissertation research, I was following up on these interviews, and there was sort of a strange thing had come up with one of the young women I was interviewing, and she had gotten in trouble when she was little. And I said, you know, you said your mom scolded you when you got back home, but what did she do at the time? And she said, well, nothing. Of course, nothing. You can't scold a child in public. And I thought, what? And so I only had like 3 days left in this sort of round of goodbye dinners and things where I kept asking everybody I could find. And everyone told me, yeah, of course you can't. You're not supposed to scold a child in,
why not?
In public. It would make them feel too ashamed. It would be so overwhelming to them. And they would think you didn't love them, that you weren't, that you would look like a bad parent because you were so uncaring about your child's feelings of shame, that you weren't taking care of them, basically.
And so this precept that is so widespread among American parents that you need to intervene as
right
soon
now.
As the bad behavior, because otherwise the child won't connect why you're disciplining him, not at all present.
Well,
there.
People don't think that. But what I noticed when I thought about this and then on my return research trips is that what parents do at the moment is they tense up and they're ashamed. They're upset. And I think kids know that. You know, you're holding your parent's hand who's humiliated, right, by your behavior. You don't know maybe what's going on. It's not the punishment that gets associated with bad behavior in public. It's the threat of this incredible shame that your parent can't even handle. So I do think something's being communicated, something deeply emotionally salient that makes an impact on a child. But it's not the sort of, you do this and you'll be grounded, or I will explain to you in a lectury format now all the things you've done wrong, right? Which is the kind of thing, of course, I do.
When you put all this together, what do you think your research found that could be useful to American parents?
You know, I've been thinking about that question more and more. People ask about that. And, you know, it's almost that it's not that we can borrow techniques that will be useful in our own parenting as much as that we know that there is no one technique, that the ways that kids develop and what they're capable of is much more varied than we know, and that the goals and values that parents have and the techniques that they might use to convey those to kids is much more expansive than we necessarily recognize in our own lives. And so maybe that takes a little of the pressure off of parents to make it perfect, to figure out what the perfect way to parent is. And the other message that I think is helpful is, I think we worry a lot about consistency. And, you know, when I looked at Sri Lankan parents in this village in central Sri Lanka, they weren't trying to be consistent. And in fact, what I saw often looked inconsistent. They would say, no, 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 you can't have that. Oh, okay, you can have that. It seemed very inconsistent to me. But what was always consistent was how the parent felt, the values that were most important to the parent. And that stuff isn't stuff you do on purpose. It's the psychological and cultural orientation you bring to these encounters, what's most important to you. And that's pretty consistent. And I think that does get communicated to kids. And that is, of course, then what captures their attention and what they have lots of opportunities to pay attention to.
Did this experience change the way you parent?
Well, of course, I was doing a lot of my parenting in Sri Lanka when my son was little. So I'm sure it did in ways that I can't quite, you know, get my hands on. I know that one of the ways that it shaped my son is that when we came back, you know, in Sri Lanka, young men interact with children a lot. They don't especially little boys, you know, so he would kind of climb on the bus and crawl his way under everybody to the back of the bus and sit on some teenage boy's laps, right? So when we came back to the States, he was actually friendly towards teenage boys who then responded quite cordially, a little surprised, I think. So I think I do, and I hope that that has in some ways shaped his own sense of sort of generosity and masculinity as he's gone through his kind of growing up time. But again, you know, what I do is a little harder to pay attention. You know, it's harder to pay attention to our own everyday parenting.
Well, one of the things I was wondering when you had that aha moment about not disciplining a child in public, mm-hmm. was what does that mean for the concept of it takes a village to raise a child, which, you know, has become quite popular in the U.S. But if you're not, it sounds like you're not, they aren't sharing,
you know, they
that
aren't.
Kind of discipline.
You know, it's Sri Lanka's unusual. You know, much of the world does a lot of shared childcare, and Sri Lankan parents do too, but they're organized in nuclear families, much like is standard in the U.S., unlike much else of South Asia, where there's joint and extended families. So mothers and fathers and older siblings end up doing much of the childcare. Teachers play a key role. Educators, grandmothers, mothers themselves, when they have their first child, go home typically for 3 months to their own mother's home and get cared for, much like the infants being cared for. So there is some distributed caretaking, as there is in almost every circumstance. But the authority over children belongs with their parents and grandparents, not with random villagers, at least in my observations.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.